Wardrop 5. You mentioned that the airfields, your own airfields, had landing lights. Did the German aircraft take advantage of this to attack your airfield?
Well, I don't know what they did particularly regarding the lights, but they certainly attacked our airfield on one occasion at Kudikirk. They just came in force, and I'm not quite sure now. The number of bombs must be hundreds or so bombs dropped on the aerodrome and smashed the whole place. Hangars as well, and ruined, of course, the runways, such they were, and we forced them to land on the sands, and made the sands more or less our drone for time being until we repaired the ground. But the hangars and officers were smashed and bombed and fired.
That would have been on the shore?
Yes, on the shore of the place of Mardex Sands, which is for Somalia, just like Kelly.
Could you only operate at low tide, or were they firm
Well, firm, yes, and mostly all about the time, you know. They're very solid, so good enough for our machines to land. Really amazing, we not only landed there, we also flew from there on raids. So, as regards returning, of course, we had to return to the sands on occasion, you see. We had no drone for a while. It wasn't very long, but we did it. Morris's emergency, too, was very useful after that.
How did you find the target?
Well, by map, before. We knew where the target was, and naturally enough, by our compasses and direction, and various landmarks, like railways or rivers, or even woods or forests and so forth, we'd pinpoint it, you see. And as I said before, we had to meet and see what route we're going to take, more or less, and that was where our line, as it were, you see. It was a question of going east or east-northeast and so on. We made that direction, that line. Well, we didn't bother about all go watching the compass and time in it, because I could tell from the landmarks, but I got so used to it that I could almost go to sleep and wake up and tell you where I was in a few seconds, you know, find the visibility was right. But it's just a question of time, and too, you got so used to it that you couldn't really lose yourself, you know. But unless, of course, you went around in circles and met somebody who just wouldn't take notice of what you're doing or saying. But it was quite simple, really, to find.
And you could identify a particular building or station in a town.
Oh yes, all graces, yes. Well, dots you see were so simple, they're all outlined. Our targets were such are quite easy to see. I mean, railway junctions, railway stations, active aerodromes, docks and Zeebruggy lock gates, for instance, Ostend. Quite simple, really, and quite clear. They couldn't hide them, they couldn't camouflage them, it's impossible, you see.
Did you drop anything like flares, or did you drop on previous aircraft's bombs, or was each crew expected to do it?
No, each crew was independent, absolutely independent, and never in formation, not for bombing, but independent.
And no flares?
No flares, no, they just relied on. I'm more or less trying to get an explosion or a fire on your first one or two bombs, of course. Once you've got a fire, well, you're right. Naturally enough, if you've got a good fire going, you keep on heaping more on until it made a bigger fire of it, if you possibly could, and somebody else came along and helped to do the same, obviously, you see. And one used to report for the other. I mean, if I made a fire and I was the one the first over, then somebody was following me up, but they would report. They saw a fire at a certain time, a certain place, and so on, you see.
What sort of bombs did you carry?
Well, we carried 14 hundredweight bombs, and the various sizes, right from 25 pounders, which more as a sighting bomb, and up to 1,660 pound bomb, as a one bomb, a cylinder type. But generally speaking, about 14 hundredweight, depending again on the target. I think we went to Namur, for instance, which was 250 miles behind the German lines. We had to carry more petrol, of course, and petrol tanks were augmented. And therefore, we only took, let me see, I think it was only three £100. No, was it 300 or 250-pound bombs? I think three or four 250-pound bombs. You see, that reduced the bombs because of the petrol. So it depended on the target, but invariably it was finally I was dropping the 1,660-pound bomb plus 225-pounders. The 225 was more or less a sat-in bomb. Not that there's any good, because the, if I can explain that the shape of the ordinary bomb is pear-shaped, and the shape of the 1,660-pound bomb was a cylinder. And I argued in my way, that I might have been theory, but I said that one bomb site for the two different types of bombs is ridiculous. It had to be recalibrated. Mm-hmm. It had to be about trial and error. Because the first bomb I dropped, the 1,606, was right off target. Well, I knew I wasn't such an idiot as to drop miles away from a target after the experience I had, both before coming to France, and while I was in France, I dropped enough bombs to know full well I was getting somewhere near a target. But when you drop a bomb and it's 5 miles away, it's something gone wrong somewhere. And I said to Dr. Commander Brackley, I said, about sometime somebody else had shot this bomb and he wouldn't hear of it. He said, well, what if I'm choosing to it? And finally we did. We made a huge fireplace called Mill. The Mill sidings, the railway sidings, was just full of ammunition. And we hit the sidings all right. And they saw the fire about 40 miles away. Terrific explosion. And that's when we broke up over Holland. We're not supposed to come down under 4,000. I think it's 4,000 feet, this bomb. We shouldn't drop under 4,000. But again, we got so determined we're going to do something of the wretched thing that we went down lower than we should. And we nearly got concussed. We woke up over Holland. The poor chap at the back, I don't know where he woke up. He was sick as a toad, of course. But we found ourselves over Holland. The machine just flying itself. We were quite safe. We just went out to sea and came home. That's it. They all saw the fire. Many people saw the fire as well as us.
How did you carry the bombs in the aircraft?
The bombs were actually nose first on a small eye bolt. And there's a lever, of course, which is a hook. As you pull the lever, so you release the hook, and the weight of the bomb would go down through this square aperture and turn over, because it had four vanes on.
So it was hanging tail downwards?
Tail downwards, yes, and nose upwards, you see, over the eyeball. It's coming out of the plane, then turn over with the four vanes, of course, in its right position. Now, the 1,660-pound bomb was put in horizontally. As they'd been a cylinder type, long cylinder, and that was held up in the centre of the cylinder.
In a sort of bomb bay?
No, it wasn't. Underneath, you see. And that was just released. And that used to come down. You see, nose first. Just turned over itself because the vanes would force that. But say, being cylinder shape as against pear shape, it took a different angle. It must have. So, an awful lot of damage when it did explode, wherever it exploded, I mean, £1,660. Because compared with this war, it's not to be compared, but in those days it was quite a nice sized bomb, really, when you think of it.
How did you know? I know that you knew where that an explosion had occurred. Was there any way of checking whether you'd hit the target you'd been briefed to attack?
Well, only by agents' reports. And these agents' reports used to come through to us after about 3 days. Now, one might say, well, how did the agents know who dropped the bomb and what bomb it was? Well, each one of these bombs given to us were numbered on the eye bolt, which we understand the eye bolt was made of metal, a kind of cast, which did disintegrate. And these agents used to pick the eye bolt up, look at the number, they know then. Well, they report back the number. And as we were allocated the numbers of the bombs before we went, and all our watches were synchronized, and in our report, which we had to make when we returned, we couldn't make the report out next day or day after. We had to make it out immediately when we returned before we did anything else. We used to, the time we dropped the bomb, probably report what we'd done, whether we'd caused a fire or whether we'd done damage, and the agent then would confirm really, by virtue of the number. And if you said you dropped the bomb on the target and they found it 3 or 4 miles away, this wouldn't be the answer for the misdeed, as it were. You see? So you couldn't just make any kind of report at all. You said to be absolutely correct. Not only was it verified by the agents, but probably verified by your own friends too, and other machines, you see.
Did other aircraft go out and take aerial photographs?
Oh yes, next morning. Next morning, as soon as daybreak, I got an idea. I can't tell the number of the squadron now, I used to know it so well. Mostly DH-5s, I think. And we used to have these photographs then sent on to us, of course, showing the damage. And in fact, fortunately, after the war was over, we shared quite a number of these photographs and shared them out. I've got quite a number of them, showing the damage of aerodromes and Zubraki lock gates and so on. And from that, from the agents' reports, which was about 3 days, plus the photographs, we could tell them we were on target them, and plus, of course, our various reports, which again was verified, you see.
Coming back, as you were returning, or in fact on the way out, was there very much enemy opposition?
In the way of searchlights and gunfire, yes. As regards airplanes, no. Only on two occasions did I ever see an enemy to be close enough to have any combat at all. But I must admit that, as far as I remember now, that I really got the worst of the combat on both occasions. He really ripped one of the wings up. What I did to him, we don't know. We fired back at him, but I'm sure we got the worst of the encounter on both occasions, as far as I was concerned. I think we're just too ponderous to compare with a fighter. We just couldn't no match for him for speed. But we both broke it off because, obviously, the only answer to it would have been a collision, and we both had gone down. So, as neither of us wanted that, obviously, we just broke it off. Simple as that.
Was it very easy to see other aircraft?
No, it's very difficult. You just see them and they're gone. I mean, it's like a very fast bird in the air. You know, you see it's now, it's gone, and so on. Mm. And they've been circling round and underneath you. What we used to try and guard against was anybody getting out underneath our back tail, you see. And that's where the rear gunner came in with firing downwards. We used to always try and avert that. If we found that anybody was near us, then we used to take more or less evasive action as much far as we could. We could sidestep, you know, those handy pages. We'd go up and sidestep down, and so we used to get out the searchlights, actually. Mm-hmm. We never get out the searchlights by trying to dive down or turn round. The only way we get out the searchlights was sideslipping.
Could you shoot them up?
Oh, yes, we got down low enough. They got that, too. They got that many times. Oh, yes. Yes. We got down low enough, we'd chase all kinds of things. I mean, trains and we come along the lines we used to, the front line. We decided we'd go there, you know, on the way home, or it's... Well, one of those things, you know, you got it in your blood, you just couldn't help it. It depends how you felt.
This was the roving commission.
Oh, yes, roving commission, you see, oh, yes.
And who would choose what targets, a pilot or
you? No, no, himself, no, the observer. No, his job is, he's responsible. You go after this, that and the other, you see.
Were trains difficult to hit?
Oh, yes, they were, really, because what you try and do is either aim in front of them, you see. Especially the line-up, no one about the train. The great thing is knowing where he was going, watching where he was going, and aiming before him, you see. And he smashed the lines up because you know jolly well he's got to stop or you know, crash. We were very successful, I think, you know, on the whole. I didn't say we hit every time we went down, of course we didn't, but on the whole, I think we did a good job of work, really.
You mentioned just now the rear gunner had a machine gun that came down through the floor of the aircraft.
There were two platforms, you see, a lower platform and he climbed up the top platform.
Did he, can you remember, sit in this, or did he kneel to fire?
No, he said he could sit down. Sit down. Mm-hmm. And stand up on top. Mm-hmm. Sit down below, but stand up on the top platform. He had a platform at the top, you see, it's the two guns at the top. He stood there.
Before over water operations, as indeed most of your trips were, I know that you didn't have parachutes. Was there any other form of survival gear, like did you carry a life raft or anything?
No, not even a life belt. sometimes we had a dive belt on there with a compressor, small compressor tube in the carriage, you know, Bellator. Very, very, you could have, I suppose, supported us. But of course, we would have relied on the machine, because the machine would have supported us for a while, you know, the wings had flipped. We had two of our people thinking down. The plane itself would float for some time. Although it sounds almost impossible, to, you know, a machine weighing 20 tons, as I just said earlier, but it would have done.
How did you, to return to the machine for it, but how did you get into the aircraft?
Underneath.
Did you have a ladder?
Yes, oh yes. There's a ladder, and you come underneath it, the floor of the machines, you get in and you climb in and pull the floor up, shut the trap door, you see.
Was the ladder carried in the aircraft and you put it out, or was it
kept on the ground, yes. No much room for anything else, you see, up in the machine.
So that if you landed at an airfield that wasn't one of your home bases, say at a fighter airfield,
you just fall out, it's all quite simple, you know, just land overhead and down you come. Simple as that, you know. It's a bit young now to get out, because he's all right on the platform, he's lower, his tire was lower, you see. So he's all right, so probably to just, you know, worry us at all.